One thing I think the action plan doesn't resolve that's key to the question you asked is where to strike that balance, where to put the threshold for, let's say, semiconductors that the Commerce Department won't allow American manufacturers to export to, let's say, China. I'm not sure there is yet a kind of definitive national security view on whether open source in this space can be misused without the other pieces of the technology in a way that makes it absolutely wrong or absolutely fine with respect to national security. But this action plan picks up on that and indicates that federal AI funding should be withheld from states whose laws, whose regulatory environment is deemed to counter the purpose of those grants. This is one, like a lot of things in a strategic level document, where I think implementation will really matter because there's a narrow and there's a broad reading of that piece of the action plan.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to Regulating AI, the podcast that brings together global voices to shape innovative AI governance worldwide. I'm your host, Sanjay Puri, and today we are diving deep into one of the most significant shifts in US AI policy in recent history. And to analyze that, we have a truly unique perspective on some of these questions. I'm thrilled to welcome Joshua Gelser, partner at WilmerHale. He focuses on AI, CFIUS, cybersecurity, national security related litigation. But what also makes Joshua's perspective extraordinary is his recent tenure at the highest levels of government. Until January 2025, Joshua served as the Deputy Assistant to the President, Deputy White House Counsel, and Legal Advisor to the National Security Council. Before that, he also held senior roles, including Deputy Homeland Security Advisor. Joshua, welcome to Regulating AI.
Thanks so much for the invitation. Excited to get to join you.
Awesome. Joshua, we have a global audience. We have policy leaders, members of Congress, Senate, and other leaders, as well as from policy leaders around the world, entrepreneurs, et cetera, who listen in. The AI action plan was introduced last week by the Trump administration. And the plan spans innovation, infrastructure, as well as internal security from what I have gone through that. In your view, what's the thought line or the through line that you see that connects these three pillars?
You're right that it covers a lot. I think the through line is the notion of supporting the US private sector at home and abroad. So it's the US private sector's version of AI that dominates the global marketplace.
So it's the US private sector that dominates the marketplace from that standpoint. Joshua, you mentioned that the plan stops short of staking out a position on fair use and training data. And that's a very important aspect because there was some conversation that that some of this is fair use, and there have been some legal cases in the past. What should policymakers and courts watch out for next on that aspect?
Now, I love that you went there first, because for the lawyers, this is a fascinating, fascinating issue in AI. And in the past month or so, we've seen three district judges, three federal judges, tackle this issue, with two of them concluding that more or less fair use did protect AI model developers in using copyrighted information, copyrighted materials for AI model training, and one finding that it didn't. And there was some question as to whether, for all of its scope, the AI action plan would stake out a view on this legal issue. It didn't, though President Trump, in his speech in his remarks announcing the action plan and three accompanying executive orders, he did tackle this issue. And he seemed to side with the model developers in suggesting a lack of feasibility for every copyright holder to be rewarded. In other words, he seemed to lean towards the fair use side. But remarks from a president in passing are not the same as case law from the federal courts. And lawyers will need to watch carefully the percolating cases, especially as they go up on appeal.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting as we watch, but it's one of the more important things that happens. Joshua, one of the key things that one of the many things, the important one that's been talked about is this whole issue of power, land, and permitting. You talked about how to speed up data center builds, grid upgrades, permitting, use of data centers in government land, etc. What is your view? You have a view on this in terms of how do we speed this up without obviously compromising on security or on community concerns?
The United States starts, in essence, from a very privileged position here. There is a lot of land in the United States, and especially given some of the novel energy sources that the AI Action Plan specifically encourages for consideration, there's the potential for a lot of energy that hasn't been built out into the sort of infrastructure upgrades that, for example, China has built out to power its AI development. So I think you've described it well. The action plan does at least two things. It says, with respect to any land in the United States, the government is charged with making it a less cumbersome, less burdensome, altogether faster process to get the permits needed to turn that land into something actually usable for the sort of data centers needed for model training, model maintenance. Beyond that, the action plan tries to accelerate an initiative that began under the prior administration, which is making certain federal lands available to the U.S. private sector. Now, there are things that get sacrificed, including, for example, a commitment to clean energy or some of the environmental considerations. But that's where this action plan strikes the balance in favor of get that land available, put it in play, let the infrastructure grow on it.
So we're going to build on that front and see how we can get it done quickly. One of the other aspects is the issue of, that contemplates NIST guidelines and evidentiary standards to counter synthetic media, which is relates to some of the whole issue of deepfakes, which is obviously growing in many ways. Where do you think will courts and agency realistically adopt first?
It does seem like at least voluntary standards needs to evolve with the technology here, because in some ways, I think a lot of commentators, maybe including me, are surprised that there hasn't been more of a challenge posed by deepfakes, by synthetic media that purports not to be synthetic, instead purports to be legitimate or organic, and tries to confuse the American people and other people as to who made it or who said what, or whether the person portrayed in a video really said whatever it looks like he or she might be saying. And so this is going to be a source of confusion, disinformation, potentially real public safety and national security challenges for years to come. I do think it's important that the AI Action Plan puts down a marker that there is at least a role for government setting out what voluntary standards look like to try to keep pace with, or maybe it's catch up to, that evolving issue.
Yeah. So it's going to be something we'll have to keep an eye on. Joshua, you had a lot of experience with CFIUS and export controls, and this is something this plan has talked about. It emphasizes strengthening semiconductor export controls, preventing technology transfer to adversaries. For our listeners who might not be experts in CFIUS, very few people are, or some of these, how effective are these tools and what are their limitations? Can export controls really maintain technological advantages? I mean, you have people like Jensen Huang from NVIDIA saying, hey, it's going to be innovation, not these restrictions. Other people say we need, there's two sides to this. Where do you come out on?
There's definitely an enforcement challenge here. I think even anyone still in government, as I used to be, would acknowledge that enforcement in all areas, of course, is imperfect, but maybe especially imperfect here, where spotting these sorts of evasions of export control can be quite challenging. Now, I think what government would say next is, but even imperfect enforcement, so long as it's there, deters bad behavior, raises costs, because when enforcement does pick up on evasion, on unlawful activity, it can impose some really significant penalties. And one does still see the Trump administration engaging in enforcement actions with respect to export control. One thing I think the action plan doesn't resolve that's key to the question you asked is where to strike that balance, where to put the threshold for, let's say, semiconductors that the Commerce Department won't allow American manufacturers to export to, let's say, China. Because the action plan says flood the global marketplace with US developed AI products and do export control, but it doesn't say when one ends and the other begins.
And the plan talked about building an AI global alliance, Joshua. However, while we emphasize American dominance, and then obviously we have these security issues, can the US effectively lead international AI governance while we also prioritize national dominance? I mean, it's an interesting dilemma here.
It's very hard. I think some of the commentators were quite surprised by the emphasis on multilateral fora, international bodies, even UN auspices as places to kind of foster global norms in this space and even build the sort of alliance that the action plan anticipates and calls for. That said, when you have as much of the frontier technology as the United States has, it does give some power, some ability to bring others to one's side if one puts in the work, does the diplomacy called for in the action plan to stake out those global norms. The other, I think, and this goes to the last exchange you and I had about where exactly one thing ends and another begins, who's in and who's out of the alliance that the action plan refers to, that matters a lot. And that's where a lot of the debate really has been. Not that there should be some information sharing, some quite a bit of exporting of the technology, even its most sophisticated forms, but to which recipient countries, either, because other recipients pose a risk themselves, or because there's a risk that hostile actors will reach the technology in those destinations.
And as you said, that list can change over a period of time, as we have seen. The one other thing, Joshua, obviously in the big, beautiful bill, they tried to put a moratorium on the, states for 10 years, but that somehow fell apart. But the plan also, this plan suggests limiting federal funding to states with burdensome AI regulations. How do you view federal state dynamics in AI governance? I mean, what's the appropriate division of authority in your view?
It's a fascinating issue that has gone from kind of the fringes of AI debate and discussion to really at the center in a pretty short period of time, because this idea of federal preemption, a 10-year moratorium, went from something being discussed in think tank papers to almost becoming federal law in just a couple of months. So as you say, this action plan picks up on that and indicates that federal AI funding should be withheld from states whose laws, whose regulatory environment is deemed to counter the purpose of those grants. This is one, like a lot of things in a strategic level document, where I think implementation will really matter because there's a narrow and there's a broad reading of that piece of the action plan. The narrow reading says, look, don't waste federal grant money. If you're going to pour it into a state whose legal landscape is such that it does less to foster AI innovation than it would elsewhere, well, that might well be a kind of reasonable, almost universal approach to good grant making. On the other hand, if what it means is use federal grant money as a cudgel, as a way to try to dissuade states from passing certain laws or even get them to revoke, to unenact laws already on the books, well, that's quite different. It raises some complicated constitutional legal challenges potentially, and it's a much more muscular or attempt at a much more muscular posture from the federal government with respect to a domain that has belonged to the states thus far because there isn't federal law taking up that space.
But what about states that already have enacted some of those laws, Joshua?
So I think the grant provision of the action plan that you referenced would, if read in its stronger form, suggest that money should be withheld. AI-related discretionary grants should be withheld from those states. And there's a world in which some of those states might choose to challenge that, including the notion that it violates what sometimes is called the anti-commandeering constitutional provision. The federal government can't make states the enactors of federal policy. I think the most natural way to preempt state law in any area is to actually fill it with federal law. And one thing that this action plan doesn't call for, though it could ultimately become a prelude to, is more comprehensive federal legislation in this area. Part of what made the debate around the 10-year moratorium or preemption so interesting is that it was a call to preempt state law with nothing, with no federal law, just to leave this space ungoverned. If there were instead a push to preempt state law with actual federal law that might call for transparency or other things picked up from current state law models, you might find that different stakeholders actually have a different view of the merits and demerits of that proposal.
Yeah, because wasn't there, I think Senator Blackburn talked about compromise with 5 years. There was all kinds of numbers that were thrown around to give enough time. But anyway, that's going to be an interesting thing to see. Joshua, the other thing that was interesting for especially folks who are building these systems is the whole open source closed model. The plan strongly advocates for an open source AI development. Now, you work on national security and have worked on national security and, from a competitive perspective. What are the trade-offs of this approach?
It's a really interesting one because the action plan's call and sort of emphasis on open source, I think, picks up on some strands in the California dialogue, the tech community dialogue that clearly have been imported into this administration, including some really leading figures in this space. At the same time, it's a fissure. It's a divide among leading tech companies, with some really believing that closed model weights, not open source, not only helps protect the special sauce, the intellectual property in essence of model development, but to your point exactly, helps guard against potential misuse, distortion, exploitation of what's otherwise shared. I'm not sure there is yet a kind of definitive national security view on whether open source in this space can be misused without the other pieces of the technology in a way that makes it absolutely wrong or absolutely fine with respect to national security. But I do think it's one of those dimensions, as with many others in the AI space, that needs to keep being reevaluated as this technology evolves. This is definitely a thumb on the scale from this administration, thus from the executive branch, in favor of the open way.
Yeah, no, that's going to be very interesting to watch. Finally, Joshua, the AI action plan, it seemed like it was framed kind of the US AI policy primarily through the lens of competition with China, stating, whoever has the largest AI ecosystem will set the global AI standards. I mean, do you agree with this competitive framing? What are the implications of viewing AI governance primarily through a national security lens?
It goes to the heart of the action plan's framing, because I think the action plan, both explicitly and maybe even more so implicitly, it does make an economic argument, good for American companies, if American companies can build out their infrastructure, innovate, and sell to a global marketplace. But it is also making, just as you say, a national security argument. National security argument that says it's worth the risk of exposing frontier models, closed model weights, to even, at least potentially, global rivals, if that technology can become the global standard, can become essentially, irreversible, irreplaceable. And that's one of the accompanying EOs tries to take that forward with the idea of making available to the world full stacks, kind of AI soup to nuts, if you will, in a way that's American. I think this is a vision of how to win, in national security terms, the AI race that has its proponents, but also has its detractors, from those who'd be more cautious, who would say there's a period of time in which America has an advantage, and what the private sector should do is ensure that that advantage gets utilized and have the innovation to maintain it, rather than risk it becoming available to the likes of China. I don't think that debate is over yet because there's so much left up for implementation, because there will be, for example, debates over the thresholds, the cutoffs for, well, which particular chips are export controlled or not, or what particular things can AI model developers in the US sell to the world and where in the world. This debate will keep recurring and probably should keep recurring at that level of implementation.
Just as a final point, I don't know, Joshua, if you saw the Chinese PM, I think yesterday or day before, said that we need a global AI regulatory body, and they talked about a global perspective on AI, which was very interesting. Right after the AI action plan was announced, this was in Shanghai for a AI conference. So it is interesting, that these conversations are happening. The EU has done its piece with the EU AI Act. Now we have our the AI Innovation Act. Now the Chinese are saying, so it's as they say, may you live in interesting times. We are definitely doing that. And Joshua, thanks so much for your perspective. We'll keep checking up with you because this is just chapter one in this whole evolution. So thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.